Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge, bringing you the stories of incredible women who share their knowledge and let you in on their amazing experiences, helping you to learn and grow along the way. Before I introduce my special guest, I wanted to tell you about a really good book that's sitting right here on my desk. It's called The Millionaire Mystique. It's a page-turner. The book is based on research on over 200 millionaires and shares great insights on how working women can become successful. And it just so happens that my special guest today, Dr. Jude Miller-Burke, the author of The Millionaire Mystique, is here with us, and I can't wait for her to share some of the interesting findings from her research that I really think will help us all. But first, just a little bit about Jude. She's been helping high-earning women and men in business since she began her career in corporate America. She joined Honeywell as an employee assistant psychologist in 1982. Her curiosity about the factors that sort of separated women from the ones who reached the top of the career ladder from those who didn't led her to conceive the Millionaire Mystique study on which her book is based. And she really explores what makes both male and female millionaires successful, how they overcome obstacles, and what's the most effective in terms of leadership styles. So currently, Jude is a leadership coach, a consultant for individual executives and management teams. She's provided executive coaching for the past 10 years through the University of St. Thomas Business Center in Minneapolis. And she also does this through her own business, JAMB Consulting in Phoenix. So, Jude, it is an honor and such a pleasure to have you on my show today. Welcome.
Thank you, Deirdre. Appreciate you having me on your show.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I've been so excited to talk to you since I got the book and started reading it. And you certainly have such an interesting career history. You're a psychologist. You've been at companies including United Healthcare and Honeywell. You're an author, a speaker, a leadership coach. Tell us a little bit about your story and how the opportunity to write The Millionaire Mystique came about.
I had been working at Honeywell for about 10 years and then moved on to United Health Group. And myself and a few other people started a subsidiary of United Healthcare. And I was vice president of operations, and due to my husband's job, we needed to move to Phoenix, Arizona. Well, I had grown up in rural Minnesota in a lower-income family, and pretty much from the School of Hard Knocks, and we moved to this very wealthy suburb of Phoenix, and I was really struck by the stories that people would tell me over a glass of wine or a cup of coffee, and I met so many people who grew up in poverty, who were abused as kids, who witnessed abuse in the home, who had an alcoholic parent, but somehow they got from point A to point B. And, you know, because I'm a psychologist, I've always been very curious about people. So I wanted to know what was it about these individuals that made them so different and how they became successful in spite of their family upbringings. And just a little background on myself, my parents were 18 years old, a Polish Catholic family when they got married, did not have the opportunity to go to college and had five kids right away. So I was one of five.
Wow.
And somehow all of us went to college and got graduate degrees. And so I was really fascinated, too, about how the generations change over time. And I did not have much guidance. You know, my parents were kids themselves, and they had their hands full. And so I wanted to provide guidance because I knew that I could come up with a template. It may not look like what we've been told, you know, success looks like in the past and how to get there, but I knew I could find some guidance from all these people I knew and from what I experienced myself and pass it on to other individuals. So that's my goal. This book is a how-to book, It spells it right out. Here's the advice. This is what you need to do in all these different areas to become successful. So it's a way of giving back.
Yeah, there is a lot of advice in the book. And, you know, if you could just pinpoint maybe certain qualities that stood out that you found, for example, what does it take to be a millionaire? Do you have to be a great leader? Do you have to be an excellent orator? Are you a conscientious person? What are some of those personalities that really stand out?
The first step that I talk about in the book, The Millionaire Mystique, is that to really step back and assess what your family upbringing was like. And it took me for a while to really see the positives that I got from my family. So even though my parents weren't college educated, we had a very tight, loving family, which had its problems, but we were a tight family, and my parents owned a business. So what's interesting is over 50% of these self-made millionaires, their parents own businesses. So they grew up around the dinner table talking about the local hardware store, the local grocery store. And so the message that was given to these individuals is that entrepreneurship is a very acceptable option to take. Also, so many of these people, their parents exhibited, they were very engaged with their business. They were very engaged in their work. They were very hardworking, very conscientious. So I really encourage people to pause and think about the family they grew up in. And I have some suggestions in my book about how to take the best of your family forward and let the rest go. Then in the next chapter, I really take a look at personality characteristics. The most statistically significant finding I had, and there were many, many findings that were very statistically significant, was conscientiousness. This group follows through. They pay attention to detail. They honor their commitments. So whether that was within their families or within their businesses or their other workplaces, they really were a conscientious group. People could count on them. Many of them were extroverted more than the national norm. So, of course, I took standardized measures so we could compare to just kind of more the normal or average population. And this group as a whole was a bit more extroverted. But I also, in my own personal practice, have coached a lot of leaders that are more introverted. And I really encourage and coach people to go with their strengths. A very affiliative group, very interested in teamwork, interested in other people, and very open. So this is a group of people where, you know, if everyone comes into work on a Monday morning and someone says, "What did you do this weekend?" This individual might say, "I took up mountain biking, and I got this great bike, and I was up in the mountains," or "I picked up golf," or "We went to this great new theater." And so it's a group of people that are very open and very curious about life. And they also, and this probably won't surprise you, they're lower on the neuroticism scale. So if they have a...
I would think you'd have to be.
Yes, you would have to be. If you have a fight with your spouse, they can leave it at the door when they walk into work.
So this can be controlled. Is that one of the messages that you send out? So if you are somebody who you're a little conscientious, you sort of help them to understand how to be more. Or maybe you're a little neurotic and you need to tone that down. Would you say the book kind of helps people to see this and to strive to balance it out or to be better?
Definitely. In terms of personality characteristics, we're all kind of predisposed to be certain ways in terms of sensitivity and whether you're more analytical or more emotional, more athletic, whatever it is. But my book helps you realize what are your strengths and to go with your strengths, because it's so important to be authentic when you go into the workplace and to operate from a place of strength. Also, I have self-assessments at the end of like the personality chapter and the work styles chapter. So you can really take a look at yourself and say, how conscientious am I? You know, how much do I use social influence? Because one of the characteristics that was the most fun that I explored is that this is a group of people who really know how to socially influence others. In other words, they can take people from a no to a yes, and they're comfortable doing it. They do it with humor. They do it with care. but they can persuade people to see their perspective. And oftentimes this involves listening to others, and as I mentioned, using humor, and really developing a positive network of coworkers and colleagues. So they're good at using their connections to make things happen and can also adjust their communication style to fit whomever they're talking with. For instance, let me give you an example. So say there's a meeting and the person, this individual, walks into a meeting. They can focus intently on the person they're speaking to form a good, solid relationship. But they also move around the room and are comfortable meeting other people. And also, over 50% of the women I surveyed, and this was very much a surprise to me, were comfortable arguing a point to closure.
Interesting. Yeah, that is surprising.
It is surprising. And also, over 60% of them had been told they were argumentative by friends and family members. So, you know, we often, so much in the media today, social media, about the bossy girls, you know, bossy girls.
Right.
But indeed, this is a group of women and men, but a group of women specifically that I'm talking about in the book. And they're assertive. They are not afraid to deal with conflict, to fight for their piece of the pie, but also can use humor and leave it at the door and not take it home with them.
Interesting. All of these traits are, you know, not surprising, some of them, although what you just said was a little surprising to me. I also read somewhere, or maybe I saw it in a previous interview that you were in, something about adverse events that often shape the millionaire mystique. Have you found that regularly with your millionaire personalities, that something maybe traumatic has happened in their past?
Very much so. And on average, these millionaires and multimillionaires, and they are all self-made millionaires that I studied. People did not get the money through inheritance or marriage. But on average, they had two adverse childhood events. And Malcolm Gladwell talks about desirable difficulties in his book, David and Goliath. And I'm doing some writing now and have just submitted a couple of proposals for national presentations to some of my professional associations around the country. But what I'm looking at is how the specific problems that individuals experience as children translate into their work style and how it may put them on a trajectory towards success. So in other words, say you grew up in a family and one parent is alcoholic, well, of course, you wouldn't wish that on anyone. Or maybe there's abuse in the family. You would not wish that on anyone. At the same time, these kids are learning techniques to cope and survive and thrive at an early age that then they can use later in the workplace. So often
strong
you hear
coping
about
leads to better business skills?
It can. It can.
Yeah.
Now, some of the millionaires I interviewed had upwards of 8 traumatic events. And then deck starts really getting stacked against you, and then that gets really challenging. But yes, on some level, having difficulties as a younger person when you're in your family's home and learning to survive and thrive in spite of them can help an individual thrive in the workplace.
Now, in your past, do you feel that anything has occurred that maybe affected your direction or your desire to pursue your goals and become successful? And I don't know if it was an adverse event or what was it that sort of made you propel ahead the way that you did?
Well, that's a very good question. I think having parents who are 18 years old, it gives you a little bit of an idea how challenging things were at times being in rural Minnesota. But at the same time, you know, my parents, I'm very clear that, you know, they did the best job they could. Unfortunately, I lost a brother, and he was my younger brother, and I'd helped raise him. And I think that really changed my... It was very sad, and I think it really changed my worldview. It really made me take even a closer look at what's important in life. And the profits from this book I'm giving to the Fresh Start Women's Foundation here locally, and I think my worldview includes giving back. And if I can make it easier for other people, I kind of stumbled along and bumbled along, and there was a point where I wanted to pretend that it was all kind of a pretty path.
But what I found out is for so many of the people I interviewed and surveyed, it's more like a labyrinth. You know, doctors Carly and Eagley talk about the labyrinth for women. And over, I'd say, 50% of these self-made millionaires had detours. And many of them had outright failures and really saw failure as a part of success. And so the detours and the failures became more of the norm. And I think seeing that made me more comfortable talking about my own path. You know, one of the things that happened with me is I had been working in the nonprofit world and was a director of programs at a small crisis center in Minneapolis. And the employee assistant psychologist, Jan DeLacy, came from Honeywell, and she was looking for a postgraduate internship person. And I just finished my master's degree. So I and several other people interviewed, and I got the postgraduate internship. And I went and robbed my mom's closet, got my hair cut, and I had my
everything you have first, to.
Right, I had my first corporate job, and I had the wonderful opportunity then, I stayed there for 10 years, to provide psychological services within a corporate setting. And it was probably one of the most spiritual jobs I've had. But that was also a pivotal experience for me, just having the responsibility and the latitude to help so many people.
Oh, that is terrific. And just going back to what you said before, the labyrinth, the failure, and the detours, it's so true that all of what we go through to get to where we are helps to build character and strength and develops us so that we can be great today. I'm talking with my special guest, Jude Miller Burke, author of The Millionaire Mystique, business psychologist and executive coach. In the next segment, Jude will share her thoughts on whether it's easier or perhaps more difficult for women to become millionaires.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from interest to action, giving you a roadmap that fosters deeper engagement and forges stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformance.com. Thank you.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge, host of Women Worldwide. Welcome back to the show, where Dr. Jude Miller Burke and I were just chatting about her experience writing her book, The Millionaire Mystique, and what it takes to become a millionaire. So, we've covered a lot of ground about the personalities, things that stand out, and adverse events. Jude, what do you think when it comes to women? So you've studied all these millionaires, male and females. Do you think it's easier or more difficult for a woman to become a millionaire?
Today, with these economic difficulties we've had in our country and around the world, I think it's more difficult for both sexes. But in terms of men and women with things being held equal, I think it is more difficult for women. And so many of the women that I researched and interviewed had their career took detours because of childbearing and child rearing. So even with this very successful population of women, whereas pretty much all the men I studied who were millionaires, multimillionaires, had children, only a portion of these women had children. There was something like 25% of them that did not. And also, most of these millionaire women were going home at night and were responsible for the second shift, where only 2% of the male millionaires would go home and be responsible for that second shift of child care and household duties. And so, you know, that's interesting because clearly these women could afford to have had more help in the home. But I think it speaks to how significantly we've been socialized as women to care for others and to show our love by taking care of others. And so it's really challenging, no matter how successful you are, you know, to figure out how to do that integration of work and family. I also think that, you know, we're a sexist culture, and that when a woman walks into a room, So no matter how she dresses or looks, people are very aware of her gender. And
right.
something like 35% of the women I researched said they tried to look less feminine on a daily basis. And
wow.
I find that fascinating. So I believe it's more difficult for women than for men. I interviewed some very successful men who had been CEOs of different companies about what they thought women needed to do differently. And
ooh,
I thought their response, it is interesting, and
yeah.
I admire them that they were willing to be quoted in my book, and they,
oh,
you know, this
boy.
Book, again, is
great.
Chock full of advice about what work styles work the best to become successful, what kind of leadership styles work the best. But what these guys said about the women is that they needed to be more comfortable with themselves. But that's a bit of a catch-22, of course, too. If you're working in a, you know, when I started at Honeywell, it was primarily a male-dominated company, and I was all of 28 years old, and I think people called me Little Flower the first 2 months I was there. You know, I mean, it's just, there is sexism. It is alive and well, no matter what company you're at, no matter how high level you are in the company. And so in the book, the women discuss how they learn to deal with the sexism and how to overcome it. But the men I surveyed encouraged the women to be themselves and to go with their strengths. And then one of the CEOs discussed how important it is and how women can get different skill sets to become board members and maybe first become board members of nonprofit organizations, but then move on to those boards of directors where you can get paid for corporate boards and how we need to get more women on corporate boards. And so that's
yeah.
really significant and important advice.
No, I mean, that is great advice, and I love that they're willing to share it. And I remember, you know, you just said the getting women on corporate boards. I do remember seeing a statistic in your book, which almost shocked me. It was more about women senior leadership in the Fortune 500 companies. I think it was as low as 15%. I don't know if I'm getting this
yes,
statistic
that sounds
correct.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I can only imagine if that's so low, the number of women on corporate boards is probably pretty low, too.
And over 60% of the women I surveyed reported experiencing prejudice.
Yeah.
And so it's very high. On the other hand, the men and women came together, and they gave very specific recommendations that would be foundations to get breakthrough success. And they almost matched each other. Category by category. And some of the things that both the men and the women, millionaires and multimillionaires, recommended were networking with others. But networking
yeah.
has a new definition today. It's not the, you know, what it was 20 years ago where you hand someone your business card and you're waiting to see how they can help you. It's really about forming honest relationships and seeing how you can help other people without looking
right.
for getting something back. So this group was great at networking. They held a diversity of jobs throughout their career. They sought out challenging positions and assignments, and they really went after operational line experience. Over time, they focused on getting some managerial experience. Many of them, over 70% of them, had owned their own business in the past or currently. And, of course, you know, it's important if you're going to work for an organization to make sure it's a really good organization with good managers and with family-friendly policies. So it was interesting to me how the men and the women millionaires came together and had similar recommendations to get that breakthrough success.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I was wondering, as you were sort of going through your own career progression, like many women, did anyone influence you early on, whether male or female, and how did they help you to sort of grow, either professionally or personally?
The woman that came to the nonprofit center, Jan DeLacy, who was a psychologist, you know, took me under her wing as I entered into corporate America. And then I had another supervisor, Susan Giese, and she was very helpful to me and, you know, taught me financials. And so by the time I left Honeywell and moved to United Healthcare, I had had a number of good female and male supervisors and managers. When I left Honeywell, we had started with a division of 6,000 people, and we had had to lay off quite a few people. We were down to about 3,500 people. And I saw this ad to build a subsidiary in the paper, and it was to build a phone-based, and I'd run a phone-based crisis center, you know, at the program level, and also to do employee assistance counseling, which I had done at Honeywell. But a very harsh and astute business friend of mine, he said, "You're leaving Honeywell, you're going to nothing. Nothing has been built. You will have nothing." And I thought, well, I'm going to take that leap of faith. And I did, and probably one of the most rewarding experiences I've had, aside from having my twins, was that we built this subsidiary. And by the time I left the organization, we had several hundred employees. We had face-to-face offices throughout the country that provided crisis intervention and counseling. It was truly an amazing experience. And the counselors I worked with, people were highly engaged in their work. They were conscientious, great people skills. And we had this mission where us, you know, we all together wanted to help these corporations throughout the country. So we had contracts such as Safeway grocery stores, and when there was a death in the workplace or a violent threat at some other workplace, a bank robbery, we would send teams of people out, and we would also provide 24-hour a day, 7 days a week, crisis services over the phone. So it was a pivotal, it was a very rewarding experience.
That's fantastic. Would you say that's your proudest moment, or were there others that you can think of? That sounds amazing.
Well, I know we're talking about work, but I had twins at age 40, so
that was
probably my proudest moment. They were born healthy.
And holy cow.
And I finished my dissertation while I was pregnant with the twins and working full-time as vice president of operations at United Health.
I can't imagine.
I felt very proud to work with that group of people because they really were interested in doing what is best for people around the country and to help as many people as possible.
That's awesome.
But I truly believe that if I can become successful, you can become successful. Well, you already are successful, but I mean in the general sense, that if I can do it, other people can do it. And in my book, I have a template. I mean, at the end of each chapter, it's take this self-assessment, see where you're at, how do you need to improve your work style, how do you need to improve your leadership style, and then boom, 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 boom. These are pieces of advice. One of the last chapters in the book is on money management, and I've interviewed Leah Hoffman, who is the vice president at R.W. Baird, and Leah started her own business in her 20s, and it was a financial investment company and helping people do private wealth management, and they focused, she and a couple of her partners who were also women, focused on helping women manage their money. Because at that time, people didn't really think women had their own money that needed to be managed. So she carved out a niche, and then she eventually sold her company to R.W. Baird. But I interview Leah in the book, and she is so funny and talks about the things that women do that really they shouldn't do with their money, such as the love syndrome. I have this money. I'm in love. I'm going to give it all away.
Give it all away.
Another thing she talks about is the princess syndrome. I have to have that handbag, or I have to have that pair of shoes.
Yes, you have to resist temptation.
Yes, you do, and you have to be disciplined.
That's right, very disciplined.
She gives some concrete advice on how to manage your money to turn it into a sizable wealth.
Well, I didn't get to that chapter yet, but I can't wait to read it. And you know, with all the advice that you've given, and there is so much information in your book, if you could just share right now to other women who might be struggling because they have a tough life challenge or some unique challenge, what would that advice be?
It's so easy for us as women to only think of others. and whether that's, you know, parents or kids or spouse. And it's so important to take time and to respect yourself enough to keep moving forward with what your own goals are, whether they are personal or professional goals, and to just keep chipping away at them and not let go of your own dreams. Because, you know, at some point the kids go to college and you will be with yourself again, and you want to be able to fulfill some of those dreams that you have. And you can do it. I believe in people who have desire and discipline and want to employ some of these principles. They can become very successful.
Well, I believe that too, and I think that's great advice. Jude, tell us where my listeners can find out more about you and your book, The Millionaire Mystique.
My book is on Amazon, and it also came out in the United Kingdom in November. It came out in the U.S. in October, and I have a website, www.themillionairemystique.com.
That's awesome. Jude, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your knowledge and personal experiences and all the valuable information from your study. I know I've learned so much from your book so far and our discussion today. So thank you.
Thanks, Deirdre. I appreciate it so much. Good luck to you.
Oh, you're welcome. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning into Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge, and until we meet again for our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge, brought to you by Pure Performance Communications on the socialnetworkstation.com. You can reach Pure Performance at www.pureperformancecom.com. Women Worldwide is produced by SNI, and the opinions of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of Social Network Intermedia, LLC, or the Social Network Station.